Welcome. This is Econa Day Unplugged, and it is April 4th, 2017. I am Ann Picker, Econa Day's chief economist, and with me are Jeremy Hawkins in London and Mark Pender in Pennsylvania. The last and first weeks of the months are data heavy, so there is plenty to talk about. Jeremy, Eurozone inflation.
Indeed. Interesting one this time round, and I think a lot of people caught out by it. As folks might have seen, we saw a relatively sharp drop in the annual inflation rate, the flash measure for March, which came down from 2.0% in the final February data to only 1.5%. Expectations had been for a dip of perhaps about 0.2 percentage points or so. Now, some people have been looking at that and starting to think, well, perhaps this recovery we've seen in Eurozone inflation in previous months have been overblown, and it's still a fundamentally weak price situation in the euro. However, I think it's important to bear in mind some of the distortions impacting the data this time round. For a start, the core rates both only came down 0.2 percentage points. Well, that's still a fairly chunky decline. But it's key to remember that this month last year, we saw an early Easter. And what that means is that prices were hiked that much earlier last year than they were this year. Yeah, holiday increases and related increase tend to mean that when we get the Easter period, prices go up. So sensibly, prices went up in March 2016. They haven't gone up as much in March this year because it's not Easter yet, and that automatically passes down the inflation rate. Now, it's hard to say how much of distortion that actually took place in this particular set of data. But what's going to be key, to how financial markets perceive the outlook now for interest rates will be what happens next month. If most of this fall is just due to the Easter distortion, then quite simply, it should be unwound next month because we get Easter prices this April going up, whereas last year they fell. So what happened last month will be unwound when we get the April numbers. If that doesn't happen and we don't see inflation moving back up towards the 2% mark, then it kind of would suggest that the ECB still has a real issue when it comes to trying to get inflation back again in the Eurozone. So I think that's probably going to be the key data to look for as far as Eurozone financial markets concerned over the next few weeks.
What about the decline in the number of bonds, the amount of bonds the ECB is going to buy going forward? It's been reduced from 80 billion to 60 billion euros.
Yep, that's right. Quite right, too. We've got the... Well, of course, we're not allowed to call it tapering as far as the ECB is concerned at the moment. This doesn't actually constitute tapering. And although, as you mentioned, we've now got the monthly purchases reduced by 20 billion euros, that, as far as the ECB is concerned, is at this stage just a one-off adjustment, which I assume is why they're refusing to call it tapering per se. Nonetheless, as far as financial markets are concerned, it is the first step in the direction of finding getting rid of these purchases altogether. Although it's got to be said, that still looks to be some way down the road. Indeed, we'll probably still see purchases continuing well into next year, if not beyond that as well. But as you mentioned, it has started now. We do have fewer bond purchases taking place, and policy now is not being loosened as much as it was on a monthly basis.
Mark, tell us about the ISM and PMI surveys. What are they telling us? And by the way, what should we expect from employment report on Friday?
Well, we had a little bit of a separation between the ISM manufacturing report yesterday and market economics manufacturing PMI. The ISM has beaten the Econa Day consensus for now 7 months in a row. So that is a real indication of how strong these anecdotal sample is from ISM, how confident, how upbeat, of course, that sample is on new orders, on production, on employment. It's really an extraordinary extraordinary run that this report is having. But the contrast here is the PMI manufacturing index from market. They are showing a loss of momentum, but they are really in the minority here. Most of these anecdotal advanced samples are showing really great strength, including the Philly Fed, for instance. And they're pointing to expectations among businesses for unusual strength. Now, we also have factory orders this morning, and they are showing strength at the headline level. We've had 3 months in a row with 1% plus gains. But even here, however, there is a bit of a separation because capital goods orders are low, and we also had trade this morning. We're talking on Tuesday, April 4th. We also had weakness in capital goods exports, and this has been on a long trend. A couple of years we've been seeing weakness here, and so it's not panning out completely. And January and February were both skewed higher by aircraft orders, rare strength in aircraft orders. And this is a very volatile, comparatively small component, but it's on the margin, and it can go away. I mean, a Boeing can get 12 orders 1 month, and then zero orders, and then 40 orders, and then, you know, and so that's kind of what we're seeing. But if you exclude that, maybe the anecdotal reports aren't showing the same kind of strength that the factory government data is out of Washington. And we had a very important report yesterday, and that was motor vehicle sales. These are the first hard data that come out for any 1 month. This is actual numbers. This isn't sentiment. This isn't people, guessing at how things will go. This isn't like consumer confidence, where you make an estimate for what you believe will happen. This is actual numbers, and the actual numbers are very surprisingly weak. The whole quarter was a very bad quarter for vehicle sales, and vehicles are 20% of retail sales. This is a very significant event, I think at the time it made you wonder whether or not the first quarter was going to come in on the negative side. It's probably tracking at about the 1% growth rate. It's not a great growth rate. In fact, it's the weakest. It'll be one of the weakest first quarters of the whole expansion. And it's going to be based on consumer spending, which is a direct contrast with how incredibly strong consumer confidence readings are. And they are as strong. They're matching these factory anecdotal numbers, which are basically sentiment indexes, in this strength. And there has been the consumer has yet to come into to show anything like the consumer confidence readings have been. So, and a point on the first quarter, there's lots of questions on whether or not the seasonal adjustments are lifting up the first quarter enough. And what I say lifting up is that the output during the first quarter relative to the other quarters is lower. So to make an adjustment for sequential comparisons, quarter-to-quarter comparisons, you have to pump up the first quarter. And maybe they're not pumping it up enough. And that could very well, I guess, be possible. And certainly, there's a lot of controversy about this in the seasonal adjustment field. But if you just take the first quarter and you look at it compared to other first quarters, this first quarter was surprisingly weak. Besides the vehicle sales, we still have a whole month of March data to go through yet. So it's still the jury is still out in the first quarter, but it has surprised on the downside, and it has raised talk in the financial markets about the unwinding of the Trump trade. The Trump trade being a movement into risky assets on expectations of strong economic growth. And did the markets get ahead of themselves? We'll have to see. So,
Mark, something that disturbs me is the seemingly disconnect between the hard data coming out of the government and coming out of Washington, I should say, and the surveys, the sentiment surveys, which have gone through the roof. Uh-huh. I find that very disturbing and possibly a negative link going down the road.
Interesting. Well, that opens up the political polarization question. And the report that's taking this, is facing this head on, is the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Report. They have a Democrat and a Republican index. And the former is at record lows and the latter is at record highs. And there's a little bit of... It's so extreme that for instance, the Democrats see a recession and inflation ahead, which and those don't always necessarily go together, and then the Republicans see a boom with no inflation. So you're getting, I think, a psychology or there's some other element than complete reason going on with these sentiment indexes. Of course, that's what they are. They're sentiment indexes, but
well,
they're designed. Yeah.
What about I forgot what I was going to say now.
What they're designed to give you a snapshot of the government data. And
Mark,
can
I ask you, in terms of, have we seen this kind of disconnect between the soft data and the hard data in the past? And
no.
If we have, which has tended to be right? Have the half numbers been revised up or down to meet the others, or what?
No. This is unique in how extreme it is. There was, during the Reagan years, there was something that was like this, and those years proved out to be successful for the economy. And so maybe that's what we'll see here. I think it should focus what it is these advanced indicators are. They're a monthly sample, a handful, several hundred of respondents, whether they're consumer or they could be more, but the University of Michigan's base is about 500, which isn't a great number, and the ISM is maybe 250 or 300, and something like the Philly Fed, it could be down to 100. So these are small samples, and there could be at play a political polarization, and if that is the case on the factory side, the question could be is whether or not company officials are more Democrat or more Republican, and I'll leave you to decide that.
And we'll have to find that out as we go forward. I'd like to say a few words about the Asia Pacific area, which hasn't been silent either this week. The Reserve Bank of Australia announced its policy decision overnight, and it kept its policy the same at 1.5%. The bank has a problem in that they're concerned about risks with high and rising levels of indebtedness, and particularly in the housing market. Yet employment data are weak, and they have a problem. If they feel they need to lower rates to stimulate employment, how are they going to sit on risk and keep that under control? A question that will be answered sometime going forward. Another important release over the weekend, actually Monday morning, overnight, the Bank of Japan released its first quarter Tanken survey. And there was mostly positive news, namely all the different groupings, namely manufacturing, large, small, and intermediate, and non-manufacturing, improved their sentiment indexes. However, capital spending was down substantially. So we'll have to see if this is an ongoing trend or will continue into the new fiscal year or not.
So Anne, was there any concerns expressed about the level of dollar yen, or are Japanese companies quite happy with where it is now?
This survey doesn't necessarily single out the exporters, but if one could gauge by the stock market, they fluctuate inversely to the yen. Namely, the yen goes up, exporter stocks go down, and vice versa. And it can be a very little change to induce a fluctuation there. It doesn't seem to be affecting it yet. However, we're still above 110 yen to the dollar. Should we approach parity, then we will see some action. And that also could explain the decline in plans for capital expenditures. Thank you, guys. It's been interesting.